What's up, you beauties, and welcome to High and Wide Radio. I'm Jim here, as always, with Jack. We do have a special guest. We'll get to him in just a second. If you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe, follow, and listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Spreaker. Quick shout out to the affiliate sites, FullPressCoverage.com and BellyUpSports.com. BellyUp Sports, they do what the others don't. Go check out Unhinged Radio on Twitter. They're a 24/7 radio station. You can have football podcast, fantasy football, hockey, basketball, you name it, it's on there. NASCAR, soccer, you name it, it's on Unhinged Radio. Go give them a follow on Twitter and click the little bio. And while you're listening to the episode, check out our site, hwhockey.net. Now let's introduce our handsome guest, Mr. Dan Silver. Dan.
I wouldn't go that far, man.
Thanks for joining us. I'm reading Johnny's comment over here. Thanks, Johnny. Yeah.
Yeah, we're taking some heat. We're taking some heat right now, Jim.
It's going to be a lot of heat dished out on this show tonight, I feel like.
Yeah. And dish we shall. You know, there's not much to really get to. Like, one of our topics is Flyers goal song. You know, if you're a viewer watching this show live, drop us your favorite song in the comment section. We'll discuss it. I want to know what you guys want to, you know, I got your opinions before the show on where you'd like to go as far as goal song. Predictably, I failed. I could not get the songs to show up to bring them onto the show, unfortunately. But you guys had great suggestions. We're going to get to Morgan Frost in a little bit. There's been some debate. There was an article that apparently came out last week that we want to touch on a little bit. And, you know, the Flyers are going to induct somebody into the Flyers Hall of Fame later this season. We'll talk about some of the inductees. First, let's get to the goal song. I want to know what you guys think about the goal song. Does it mean anything to you? Would you rather it be some kind of rock and roll song, EDM? Do you want to just go with a throwback? Dan, start you first.
All right. Well, I mean, I have really like weird musical tastes. I guess what most people will call weird. I mean, I was like a techno DJ in college. So I'm like I'm like an EDM guy. And I like, there's some like, if it was totally up to me, I'd find some weird like techno song. Like there's a Japanese like hot pop star named Kiari Pamyu who like does these crazy techno songs. I'd probably go with one of hers. But I understand that we're trying to please everyone. And the best idea that I saw on Twitter, and I think it actually got some, just looking it up right now, it got a little bit of traction, was Bobby at BT15 Get Pucks Deep. He tweeted out basically that they should do the shout song, right? And so I'm listening to it, and I'm like, you know what? If I'm at the Flyers game and they score a goal, like this would be pretty cool. It's an old song, I kind of, that was the one that for me like grabbed me. I was like, because the song needs to have like 15, 20 seconds that everyone can just kind of celebrate. And I'm like, you know what? That would be a good song to have as the Flyers goal song.
Classic party song. Is this the song that we're referencing right now? Is that the Animal House song? I think it's the song from Animal House, right?
Is it?
I believe so. I think that's what I remember seeing the thing you're talking about. Bobby put it on Twitter. I think it's from the movie, but it's a classic song. Would have liked to have had it up so the listeners knew what we were talking about. But yeah, classic song. It would get the crowd into it. I would like something just fun. You know, just something everyone can party with, you know, like you don't have to know the words to it because there's only two words to know, you know. That's why I feel like Brohim was such a good one back in the day because it was just, you didn't have to say anything. It was just a
Which song was that?
The Brohim song by Pennywise back in the day.
I'm sure if I heard it.
It was like 2006 to like 2009 or yeah. It was right before Dupe. It was right before that.
The Ducks still use it. I know that if that helps at all. Thanks, Johnny. Yeah, Johnny confirming it is.
The Dupe song is the one I remember the most. Maybe it's because they were actually maybe good during that time period. So I remember some of the goals they were scoring. But but really, I like their celebration song after they win, the two times or three times song, because I like techno. But like I haven't thought like many of their goal songs have been that good.
No,
not really. I mean, Dupe's okay, but that's always a Philadelphia Union song, really. Like they started that. The Brohim's good. I like that one. Everything else is kind of okay. And I don't know if we're transitioning to me, but I'll just throw mine out there. I'm old school. I grew up with the Gary Glitter song, the History of Rock and Roll Part 2. If you've ever seen Joker, with Joaquin Phoenix. It's the song where he's dancing down the steps towards the end. It's that song. Like, they always hit the horn, and you got it. You can't just start it from the beginning. You got to get the good part. But it's kind of like Shout. Shout's a little more energetic in the sense that there's that part where it builds up and then everybody just screams. It's like, hey, yeah. So like, I mean, that's from the 90s, and that's what made me a fan. I love that song. And everybody, what's that?
Like, way back in the day, I think they used to have that as like the goal.
It was 92 to 96.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have a lot of good memories of being there for the games with that as the goal song, you know? So that'll be a cool one to bring back.
Only because people kept mentioning what they already use, and Brohim got a lot of traction this week. So I was like, if we're talking older songs already used, I'll throw that one out there. However, I do completely agree with the Shout song. Like, I don't hear any other team really using that. So, and I did check some other teams what they use, and I don't think we'll get anything as iconic as what Chicago really uses. But you know what? I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think those are both classic songs, and I would enjoy either one. And, you know, I'll never get tired of it because that means they're scoring a ton of goals.
And they are going to score a ton of goals this year. Gosh darn it.
Like, show me a weak spot on this lineup, Dan. Like, we were looking over this roster a couple shows ago. And, you know, it's kind of hard to find where everyone's going to fit. But I think that's a good problem to have because they have four lines, essentially, that are going to be able to put the puck in a net or at least play with the puck in the offensive zone more often than not.
I could show you some potential weak spots if you want to go right down the middle. We have 1 and 2 look like they're okay, but 3 and 4 down the middle, there could be some question marks there. And then if you want to go to the defense where we've got the two rows of six, I would say that the second row on the right could be a little questionable, and then the bottom left and the bottom right could be a little bit questionable. And then we get to the two spots all the way down at the bottom, and I would say that both of those are a little bit questionable. So I do have some question marks.
Well, that's a pretty good segue. So let's get into Morgan Frost a little bit here. So you mentioned things get a little hairy at 3C, and I'm going to play a video. I believe we can talk over the video, so feel free. But Morgan Frost, this is hopefully...
Is this his first NHL goal?
Yes, first NHL goal.
What a beauty. What a fucking beauty. Look at this. Backhand roof job. Come on, look at those mitts.
Against Bob.
I'm going to take down Johnny's comment there. Come on, Johnny. You're ruining everything. There you go. Hopefully his first full season. He's in shape, bulked up, hitting the gym. He's ready to play. Is he going to make the roster out of camp? What do you think? Or do you think it would better suit him or serve him to play a couple games in Lehigh Valley? And then when it looks like he's ready for NHL hockey, call him up.
You know, so Isaiah and I recorded a ONB podcast a couple nights ago. Actually, I think it was last night. And one of the questions he asked me was, is this the make or break year for Morgan Frost? And I'm like, no, he's 22 years old. Like, here's the thing about Morgan Frost. I'm a huge believer in his skill set. You watch him play hockey, I honestly think that right now he's the second most skilled player on this team behind Claude Giroux. Like, what Morgan Frost does is he's the point guard in basketball who makes plays that you're watching the basketball game and you're like, I don't even know how that's possible. Like, how did he see that that was going to develop that way? And I've always thought that about him from watching him in juniors up to the NHL. Like, he makes passes that you're watching the game and you can't think about the game like that. And the only other guy on the team who can do that is Claude Giroux. So, like, I'm fully confident that at some point Morgan Frost is going to be a big-time NHL point producer unless injuries somehow derail that. Like, I'm that much of a big believer in his talent. But you can't deny the fact that the guy only played a couple games last year before having the shoulder injury. And the Flyers have brought in Derek Brassard, presumably to, you know, potentially be a third-line center candidate. And today Chuck Fletcher in a press conference – Charlie O'Connor from The Athletic asked him, he said, do the young guys coming in, are they going to have to play like that much better than guys, the veterans, to earn a spot? So presumably we're talking about like Morgan Frost versus Derek Brassard. We're talking about Cam York versus Keith Yandel. Those are the two main ones, right? And Chuck Fletcher was like, yes, the young guys have to play that much better in camp to get that spot over the veterans. So I'm almost expecting that Morgan Frost and Cam York are going to start the season with the AHL and with the Phantoms in the AHL. I think that Morgan Frost will be better than Derek Brassard in camp. I think that Cam York will be better than Keith Yandel in camp. But I feel like the Flyers almost want to start the season with the vets. So I have no concerns about Morgan Frost long term. I'm just not sure if he's going to start the season with the team. If he does, it's going to be because he's earned it. He's 22 years old. Like there's growing pains with these kids, but I'm a big believer in his talent. I think ultimately he's going to score more points this season than Derek Brassard. I don't even think it's going to be particularly close. So that's kind of where I stand with Morgan Frost. Like I believe in him as a hockey player.
Okay. I also think it behooves both of those players to not start the season with the team. Yeah, it's great if they do, and I would love them to. It's a good problem to have, as Jimmy said. But like they've never played an 82-game season, and that's going to – the wear and tear on that is going to show. And for them to let Yandel and Brassard maybe play most of – I'd be okay with Morgan Frost making it because I really just want to see him at this point. I actually think his injury was kind of freak. I don't think it's as – he undersized as people make it out to be, but until he can actually stay healthy for an extended period of time, we'll have to see. But I do think that in Cam York's scenario, it behooves the Flyers to have Keith Yandel roll. And then whether, there's going to be injuries, we 100% know there's going to be injuries. He's going to get time to play. So he'll come in whenever he can get used to the grind, get eased in. And I think that'll be better for the players for this season. And then going forward, we'll see what we have. Either way, we saw what happened when Fletcher handed the key, and he really didn't have a choice, but he handed the keys to the young guys, how that just blew up in his face. So it's good that there's competition and they have to earn it. So I'll never be against that. So I think it's the way everything's setting up and how camp's setting up. I think it's really good to have that competition. And I think team structure wise throughout the season, it makes a lot of sense.
So real quick, the really interesting thing about the Keith Yandel Cam York thing is that, Keith Yandel is like 43 games away from like breaking the NHL's record for most consecutive games played. So, how does that play out? Like, I know that he came here and he signed the 1-year deal, cause Kevin Hayes is his best friend, but like, I feel like, and he said, it doesn't matter to him. Right. I feel like that's going to play into it a little bit, right? Like
you have to think that was discussed during contract negotiations. He signed for less. I know, of course, he's going to come out and say it doesn't matter. I mean, if he said it did matter, that could be like an issue and people would take shots. So I think it matters a little bit, but it also kind of makes sense for Cam York, who's still young, to start the season in the AHL, unless he absolutely goes bonkers in these preseason games. He should start the season in the AHL, get going again, and Yandel play, unless he gets hurt, the Yandel plays with that 43 games, and maybe Braun comes out there, maybe somebody else gets injured, then York can get him down the road, and then eventually you make that transition. And he's past the 43 mark, game 44, you can do whatever. Once he has it, then it's not an issue anymore. I think they thought of this going in, and the puzzle pieces kind of fit. I think it makes sense. I wouldn't surprise me if he plays very damn close to that number and they find a way to get him to it.
I like how it's set up. I like that they have vets like Yandel and Brassard in front of guys like York and Frost. We know that York and Frost have skill. As far as Yandel, hey, get him the 43 games. Hopefully he's playing well during the 43 games. And hey, then you can start flexing in. You give York time with Lehigh Valley to kind of get his legs under him. Not that he – we'll see. We'll see if he needs it, because it's easy to say after three decent NHL games that, hey, he's ready for the Flyers. Like, how do we know? Let him gain his confidence. Let him tear up the Phantoms and prove that he's ready for the NHL. I think they're in a win-win situation, if you ask me, the Flyers, in both positions. I love that they brought in Brassard. If they didn't have Frost to come up into that 3C – and, Derek Brassard is your man for the year, then I'm kind of like, they're kind of in a crappy spot at 3C if you're depending on Derek Brassard. I see Brassard as more like a Band-Aid, like he's just kind of holding the place of Morgan Frost until Frost is 100% ready to take over that role. And hey, if he comes, you know, guns blazing and knocks the doors down out of camp and, you know, shows that he's ready for 3C, best case scenario, right? If he doesn't and kind of shows that he might need a couple games with Lehigh Valley, that's perfectly fine. There's no pressure on anyone because they have Derek Brassard, who can fill in, more than capable NHL player. That's assuming Brassard plays the 3C spot. They put themselves in a good position. You know, Chuck Fletcher, we can't talk about this offseason enough. He addressed basically everything in one offseason with this roster, right? Like what did he really miss? Like, the spot where they were weakest, the 3C spot, he set himself up to succeed, right? If Brassard's not the guy, they have Frost waiting in the wings. If Frost struggles, they can bring in a guy like Brassard. I don't know. Dan, you want to touch on Fletcher's offseason? Was there anything on your wish list that he didn't cover?
He took care of everything. I mean, and, you know, so I guess here's the thing, right, is to me, the overlying theme of this offseason was Chuck Fletcher basically acknowledging that there was something seriously wrong with the chemistry and the makeup of this team, because he took a fucking hatchet and he took it to the locker room and he extracted basically various elements and he brought in a lot more elements. Like Nolan Patrick, who I've heard from various sources is not a well-liked guy in the locker room and kind of whatever, out of here. Jake Voracek, I think the Flyers really liked him, but you know, you've got a guy who's never smiles and is blocking all the fans on Twitter. You're gone. They bring in Cam Atkinson, who posts photos of his grandmother in a Flyers jersey, like the day after he's traded to the team. Then they bring in Derek Brassard. They bring in Keith Yandle, who's Kevin Hayes' best friend. They bring in Derek Brassard. They bring in Nate Thompson. They bring in Ryan Ellis, the top defense spot next to Provorov was the one spot that he knew he had to fill, right? So like from a player personnel talent standpoint, he had to fill that role and he wasted no time filling that role, bringing in Ryan Ellis. The moves that I think most people criticized with Chuck Fletcher are trading the first round pick and a second round pick next year and Robert Haig for Ristolainen, because all of the analytics folks hate Ristolainen. So that's going to be a big thing. Right, Ristolainen was playing first pair of minutes in Buffalo, dumpster fire of an organization. Doesn't have a big hockey IQ, but he's a big physical guy who said it in his interview with Jason Mertidis after he joined the team. He said, "I will skate through the wall for my teammates, and the one thing I want to do more than anything is get to the playoffs and have an impact." Because he's been playing with Buffalo, like for a guy that's competitive, like Ristolainen. Playing for Buffalo is a disaster. So he's going to come here. He's not going to play first pair minutes unless Ellis gets injured. But Ristolainen's a guy that the spotlight's going to be on. And the other one's Martin Jones, because goaltending is still the spot with the Flyers where, you know, last season the team save percentage was like .880. I mean, it was one of the worst goaltending seasons in the history of the NHL for any NHL franchise. Carter, any way you slice it, and a lot of it wasn't on the goalies. The defense was terrible. The team offense was terrible. Or the forward defense was terrible. They're relying on Carter Hart to rebound, which hopefully he will. But then they didn't have a whole lot of money left to sign a backup goalie. So they signed Martin Jones, who played for the team that had the second worst save percentage last year, the San Jose Sharks. So the Flyers are bringing back two of the goalies who were arguably two of the worst starting goaltenders in the league last year. So that's where a lot of it's going to come down to. But look, you know, not looking at all the specific moves, what Chuck Fletcher clearly wanted to do was he wanted to change the makeup of the locker room. He wanted to bring in more veteran leaders. He wanted to get rid of some of the people who were supposedly cancers in the locker room, and he did it. So now it's on the team to perform. I think you can't argue with what he did. And the re-signing of Sean Couturier and the signing of the extending of Farabee are both big deals. So look, Chuck Fletcher had an unbelievable offseason. Now it's up to these guys to perform.
Yeah, you sure did. So one question, I have a couple of notes here that I want to get to. Well, actually, you know, let me get to the notes first. This way I don't forget here. So you brought up the Sanheim-Ristolainen pairing, and this is the first time I think we've had you on since, you know, all the moves went down. What are your thoughts on that pairing? Do you have any fears, or are you feeling confident, or are you like, let's rock? I want to see how it looks before I critique it.
I have fears. I mean, I'm not a huge, I like Travis Sanheim. I think that has a lot of talent. He's a very good skater. He might be the best skater on the team. He's a really good passer. I mean, but I'm never confident when Travis Sanheim's on the ice. And I don't know, that's like the only way I can say it. I always actually thought that Phil Myers was like a better instinctual hockey player than Travis Sanheim. That didn't really pan out last year because Myers was kind of a dumpster fire, but I like Sanheim.
Let me think. What is it about Sanheim that doesn't instill confidence?
I don't know. He just
doesn't look like he has confidence when you watch him play, like his face. Like he does not look like he plays with confidence. Phil Myers may literally like fall down or put the puck on somebody else's stick or pinch when he shouldn't, but he looks like he thinks he knows what he's doing. I don't always see that in Sanheim's look. Maybe when he jumps in on offense, I see it a little bit, but he sometimes has this bewildered look. And nothing about Sanheim's game outside of the occasional, you know, rush that really inspires a whole lot of confidence right now. And that may be a byproduct of, you know, the team, but I don't see it yet. And he's a string bean right now. Like he gets hit by anybody, it's a problem.
It was the same thing in juniors because I was back when I was actually watching, like I was really into the Flyers prospects. I was watching a lot of junior hockey. I was like, I ordered the WHL playoff package and I'm watching Travis Sanheim. I'm watching Ivan Provorov. Nolan Patrick was on the team. I didn't even know he was going to be with the Flyers at that point, but I'm watching all these guys. And even in juniors, Travis Sanheim was like, you could tell there's a lot of talent, but he never really gave you a whole lot of confidence when you're watching him. And that's kind of the way I feel about him. And Ristolainen, like I love listening to the interviews with Ristolainen. You love the highlights with Ristolainen because he can score unbelievable goals. He's just got so much pure talent, but he just doesn't really have the hockey IQ to go along with it. So I wouldn't say that I'm like overly confident in that second pairing. I mean, I almost think that Cam York could be a better NHL defenseman than Travis Sanheim, like tomorrow, potentially. But I'm okay with, you know, I'm okay with that second pairing. I think they could be decent, but I still have some concerns.
What's funny, what you just said about that pairing, Sanheim was here last year, obviously. He was on a pairing with Phil Myers. You just described Ristolainen as a player who has all the tools, low hockey IQ. That reminds me of Phil Myers a little bit. Obviously, Ristolainen is a bigger guy, could play a different role. You know, he's played top minutes a lot longer than Myers has ever has. But, like, that's a little concerning. If things were to go wrong, the wheels were to come off, that pairing could look a lot like it did last year. It's worst-case scenario, obviously. But, we gave up a lot for Ristolainen, and we just re-signed Sanheim. He got a nice little bump. I don't know how much of us were expecting that. That could be a problem.
What I'm hoping for Sanheim is somebody who – and I'm sometimes I wonder if Sanheim's trying to play outside of himself. You know what I mean? And maybe that's where my lack of confidence for him comes from, because maybe he really is not sure where he's supposed to be or what he's supposed to be doing. Or, you know, let's face it. He's not the physical, you know, porch clearing defenseman. That's not him. That's not his game. Maybe having him paired with a guy who, you know, likes that responsibility will take some of the weight off of his shoulders and maybe allow him to play a little bit more freely. And, you know, maybe Ristolainen can be that more stay-at-home guy. You know, he doesn't have to have the responsibility of being, you know, the top-pairing guy or the puck-carrying guy. You know, maybe these two paired together with less responsibilities, you know, where they kind of cater to each other, helps them be better players. I don't know. To me, it seems like a lot has to go right for these guys to be a good pair, and that freaks me out a little bit, you know?
You know, the good news is that, again, we've got Ivan Provorov, who will play every single game and will eat up minutes and will, you know, again, not a guy with a huge hockey IQ, but like we know what Ivan Provorov is at this point. Like he can play 30 minutes a game if you need him to. I really think that Ryan Ellis is going to have the biggest impact of any acquisition that Chuck Fletcher has made this offseason, because Ryan Ellis is a hockey player. Like his hockey IQ is off the charts. He'll be out for 10 to 20 games during the season just because he's getting older and he has some injuries. But like Ryan Ellis is like Cam York, except with grit and toughness. I think the Provorov Ellis pairing is going to be very good. And I think that Ellis is going to be very good for some of these younger defensemen. I think he will be really good for Cam York. I think he'll be good for Sanheim. So that trade was like, I mean, I remember I was playing poker like when that trade went down. And I think the week before I was arguing with people like the Nolan Patrick, you know, fanboys and fangirls who were like, he's going to like be the greatest. And I'm like, he's not going to be here for the next season.
How happy are you that he's gone, man?
And no one would believe me. I'm like, Nolan Patrick is not going to be here next season. You can listen to me or you cannot listen to me, but trust me, they don't want him here. Like, this organization does not want Nolan Patrick here. So I get the notification on my phone. I'm like, the Flyers just traded Phil Myers and Nolan Patrick, and they got back, wait, what? Ryan Ellis? Like, really? I mean, that was the best day of the offseason.
That move's almost underrated now because so much happened afterwards. We didn't get to talk about it at length. My first reaction was, okay, where's the 13th in this? Like, there's another piece. Like, I know there is. I just have to find it. You know, there's no way. Like, we discussed fantasy before we jumped on here. And I can't tell you in all my leagues how many times people will offer things they don't want anymore and try to get something of value. Like, you know, and I feel like that's what Fletcher did. He's like, I got to move on from either Sanheim or Myers. And a lot of people said it's probably going to be Myers. And Patrick needs out of here. So you dangle those two guys. And I get that Myers does have appeal, obviously. But to get a guy back like Ellis, it's like, do you understand what you just acquired and what you just gave up? Like, did you not chop him to other teams? Or like, it's mind boggling that he pulled that off. And I almost want to give him, and I didn't, but I almost want to give Fletcher an A+ for the offseason just for that move, because it was such a good trade.
So, well, sometimes I wonder, like, well, the best Nolan Patrick thing was like, literally minutes after getting traded to Nashville, the Nashville GM flips him to Vegas for the guy who was taken 4 picks after him in the same draft. But like, I was trying to wonder, like, did David Poile, like, maybe he really wanted Cody Glass and he was trying to figure out a way to like get Cody Glass. And we know that Kelly McCrimmon in Vegas was the GM for, you know, the Brandon Wheat Kings, and so he's got that connection with Nolan Patrick. I'd be fascinated to know like how that trade came together, but it was great. Like, Nolan Patrick, you're going to Nashville. No way. You're going to Vegas. Like, really, no one wants you except the guy who you played really well for in juniors.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's lucky. It's really, really lucky. Like, we heard reports that they were offering like a second and plus during the season, and it never happened. And even then, I was kind of like, I don't know, but to see them immediately flip him for Glass, it's like, okay, not only did the Flyers probably get offered something from Vegas for Nolan Patrick, other teams knew about this. Like, yeah, this guy wants Nolan Patrick. So if I can get what I want from them, we got a free gimme, you know. And it's not that Cody Glass has really played all that well either, but like, still, like, what we've seen from Patrick, not only has he not played well, but you got the whole headache thing that could pop up at any moment again too. So I'd rather have Glass too. Like, it just the pieces fell into place perfectly. You know, it really worked out. And thank God, because trades like that don't come around often. And as you said earlier, Dan, Ellis is probably going to have the biggest impact on this team, even if we don't see it night in and night out, because of the effect he's going to have on the locker room, particularly guys on the defense. It's still an underrated move, in my opinion. Like, the trade itself is fantastic, but his impact on the team, I still think, doesn't get talked enough about. And luckily we're about to see it. It's a slow crawl to the beginning of the season, but we're almost there.
And I think we're still seeing sort of the ripple effect, because you look at the contracts that Seth Jones got. You look at the contract that Dougie Hamilton got, that Darnell Nurse signed with Edmonton. And you're able to go out and trade two of your worst players from last season for a top defenseman making $3 million less annually was just genius by Chuck. You know, if let's say they do go out and trade for Seth Jones or Dougie Hamilton and they sign him to that contract, you're not able to sign Travis Sanheim. You're not able to bring in a Derek Brassard, you know, or a Keith Yandel, you know, because all your money's tied up. In my mind, it was the move that had to be made, right? It made the most sense. If you know, we're looking at all the holes and all the problems and all the issues on the Flyers roster, Flyers need a top guy. To me, it was just like, it's got to be Ryan Ellis.
Tell me if you guys feel the same way. Had Fletcher made the move for Ristolainen first, would you really scratch your head and be like, what the hell is he doing? But yeah, because he acquired Ellis first, not only because he got Ellis, but also because of how well he killed that trade. It's almost like I was able to accept the Ristolainen trade. I'm not an analytic guy. I do like Ristolainen, but like even more so, like, wow, that was a lot to give up, but Chuck knows what he's doing. You know,
But it was also like you didn't even have time to recover from the Ristolainen trade before he shipped out Jake Voracek for Cam Atkinson, right? So it's like, here's the offseason. We're on a roller coaster. Okay, we get Ryan Ellis for Nolan Patrick and Phil Myers, and everyone's on cloud nine. Oh, shit, we traded our first-round pick for Ristolainen. Oh, wait, now we get Atkinson for Voracek. Oh, shit, we signed Martin Jones. What the fuck? Oh, now we've got, you know, Brassard and Keith Yandel.
And he said right before he traded Ristolainen, like, we're done for the day. We're not making any trades or anything like that. I don't know if it was the day before, the same day. I know it was right in that vicinity. And boom, he makes that trade. It's like, okay, like, this guy can't be trusted.
Well, the one thing he said was that he was not going to trade the first round pick unless they got someone that was going to be with the team long term. That was an outright lie, because he traded for a guy that only has 1 year left on the contract. So, you know, but he's an NHL GM. Like, he can't do interviews and be totally honest, because other GMs are going to.
I know. It's almost like a farce, like not worth listening. Anytime they do a presser, it's like, I'm curious what they have to say, but I know deep down it's all for show. It's all BS.
But also, Chuck Fletcher's been the most honest of any NHL GM this season, because he said things about the team last year where basically he was like, you know, if I brought the same team back and expected different results, it would be the definition of insanity. Like, he's basically acknowledged that there's a big problem in the locker room last offseason. So yeah, he's been, you can't believe what he's saying in terms of things where other GMs might, you know, be impacted by it, or trade values might be impacted by it. But he's also been like refreshedly candid in how big of a disaster last season was.
Now, do you think that's like a tactic he uses for his own locker room and coaching staff and whatnot? Like, there's going to be changes because you guys are dog shit. Like, it's his way of subtly saying that, especially when you say something to the media like that and it's out there. Like, everybody better be on blast. And on top of that, to move a guy like Jake Voracek out of here, like, anybody could be moved.
I think he's just being honest, because he made those comments sort of after he'd already traded a bunch of guys away. So, like,
well, I mean, I think he's being honest too, because he proved it. But I also think, like, I don't think, if say this season starts and we get a good 20 games in and they're like 10-10, you know, like they're maybe not perfectly, but like they're about 500-ish and they're maybe on the bubble, not quite in a playoff spot. Do you think like certain guys could be possibly moved? Like, I can't say who, but like, you know, is it something that pops in your head? Like, Fletcher might have to, not have to, but he might be thinking, maybe I should do something again. Maybe the message isn't getting across. Like, depending on who's playing and who's not, like, I just feel like he wants the team, nobody's safe. Like, they shouldn't be safe. They've been safe since what, 2013, they've been safe. Like, the Hextall era, that everybody's been safe. You know, like, that's done. Nobody's safe. Like, it's time to win. Everybody's job's on the line, coaches included. Like, it's time to win. Don't fuck around. Let's go. You know what I mean? And if they do, somebody could go.
I think the realities of the cap, I think there's probably only a couple guys that I look at on this roster and I'm like, you know what? If this season turns into a dumpster fire, they could be traded. So I think that from a forward perspective, I think you're probably looking at, I mean, I guess Giroux, right? He's not signed.
I wasn't going to say it, but
next season, but I'm looking at it. You know, I think Giroux, Konechny, and JVR are like the three forwards who, if this season turns into a dumpster fire, could be on the move. And from a defense perspective, I think it's Sanheim and or Ristolainen. Like, I think they signed Sanheim to a 2-year deal because they know that Cam York is going to be ready to supplant him as a second pairing defenseman at some point. So those would be the guys if it's a dumpster fire. But I can't see them trading Claude Giroux. I just also refuse to believe that this season's going to be a dumpster fire. Like, I think the moves they made have stabilized the team enough where it's probably not going to be. On the other hand, the division's like ridiculously difficult. So fortunately, it's not last year when you had to play. You were only playing the teams in your division. This year, they start out with Vancouver at home. They haven't even signed Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson. Like, they're going to blast the Canucks out of the stadium. And then on Monday, they play Dave Haxtell and the Seattle Kraken. Like, you know they're going to want to beat them. So they have a much easier start to the season than they've ever had in the past. And I feel like they probably will get off to a good start.
They get to actually start at home with fans in the stands.
Yeah. West is coming to us for a change.
Can't wait.
Yeah. I think last year was the first year in however long, and they didn't have fans. So this year they're going to have some fans there, fully vaccinated fans only.
I think they're only doing masks. But
Is it just masks?
I emailed my Flyer season ticket rep today, actually, and asking about it. And he said, well, the Wells Fargo Center is definitely mandating masks, but nothing about vaccine mandates. I'd prefer that they did, but.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, for anyone watching, anyone interested, you're going to need a mask, and I'm sure more information will come out as the season approaches. So as far as I think it must have been before the roster moves went down, but I think it was you, Dan. We were talking about Konechny, and you were just done. You were ready to move on from Konechny. You still feel the same?
I wouldn't say that. I don't think I've ever said I was like done and ready to move on from him.
Okay, all right. But you would trade him. Whereas you may not have been open to trading.
My feeling was that when I was looking at this roster and trying to figure out players that had value who I would be willing to move, Konechny was one of them. Yeah. I was 100% sure they were going to move Nolan Patrick this offseason, and I thought that maybe Konechny would be part of that potentially. I think Konechny is a really good hockey player, and he's probably going to be the first line right wing on this team. I like him a lot. The only reason that I would have thought about trading him was because potentially you could get a lot of value back. You know, like a guy like Tyler Bertuzzi for Detroit was a guy who I thought, hey, this would be a really good guy to bring in. Could be a Konechny type of replacement, you know, plays with a little bit more of an edge than Konechny. I'm not necessarily looking to trade Travis Konechny, but he just has a good contract. He's got a lot of value. So if you're looking to really get some good players back, he's a guy who I would have looked at moving. But yeah. I'm happy he's back with the team. I still think he has a lot of upside. You know, one of the things that you know, it's tough to speculate on this stuff, right? About who was impacted by COVID in various scenarios. But, you know, I do know that what Travis Konechny has, you know, he's had a child this offseason. His girlfriend or wife had a child. Like, I don't know if they're married or not. Like, I'm sure that there are some stressful things going on with Travis Konechny last season. I don't know if that impacted his play or not, but those are some things that were going on. And, you know, I think that that he'll probably come in this season and hopefully tear things up from the start. So, you know, I wouldn't be looking to move him, but if things go south and he's got value, he's one of the guys that I would consider moving.
Konechny's like the offensive version of Philippe Myers when it comes to like who could be moved from this team. Like, I felt like if they're going to make a move, this is more for the offseason, but even going forward, I could see it. If they're going to move somebody, they're going to shake up the roster, the locker room, and still get value back, like Dan said. He's a guy who could be moved. And we saw that with Phil Myers. I could see that with Konechny. I still could. He's like the one – him and Morgan Frost are probably the two guys that weren't moved when just because of how much change happened and what we saw as assets that would actually bring back something good that weren't moved. And I'm glad because I still believe in Morgan Frost and I still believe in Travis Konechny. He's more of a complimentary piece, but I still like the guy. I always did. And I always thought that after he signed his contract and had that big year, it was like the worst thing that could happen to the guy. He was supposed to grow into that contract. First year, he goes nuts, which is great. He regresses the next year, and everybody is like, and then he had his no goal playoffs or no point playoffs, as Jim loves. And everybody, it's like half the fan base just turned on the guy, you know? And it's, I'm not there, but it wouldn't surprise me if he were moved for something. However, I would be all about him sticking around and figuring it out. And I don't think he sticks on that top line. I have a lot of confidence in Joel Farabee, but you never know. They might go with pairings and who they like and who he gels with more. And we got other guys as well, but I like Travis Konecny. I'm glad he's still here. End of the day, if he were traded, depending on what we got back, like a guy like Bertuzzi, you know, or God forbid a Matthew Tkachuk or something, somebody with like that, you know, that snarl, I wouldn't be against that either.
Are you smelling another trade coming, Jack? And you know, there might not really be a trade coming, but I want to ask you guys this question while we're talking about the roster: where does JVR play on this team? There are two guys who I have a hard time finding where they're going to play. The first guy is JVR. Second guy is Oscar Lindblom. We'll go with Dan first. Like, where do these guys fit? Like, obviously, if Lindblom can come back and play the way he did 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever the hell it was now, you know, you can find a spot for a second, third line guy. JVR, in my opinion, I have a harder time figuring out who he's going to play with on this team. I don't like him on the top two lines. I would like for him to be on the third line. But when you look at potentially who could be on that third line, unless it's Morgan Frost centering the line, I have a hard time finding where JVR is going to play. Where do you see him playing, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this team is that the areas of the biggest strengths are the wing. So, and Joel Farabee was playing some right wing last season. I think he's more naturally a left wing. So kind of the way I had it, and again, this, who knows what's going to happen, but I had it as the top line being Giroux, Couturier, and Konecny. The second line is Farabee, Kevin Hayes, and Cam Atkinson. And the third line as JVR, Derek Brassard, and Wade Allison. And I love Wade Allison. Like, I think Wade Allison's going to be a really good goal scorer in the NHL. He's a shit stirrer.
I'm going to say, talk about fun, man. It's a fun player right there.
Wade Allison's a really fun player. And like Derek Brassard was like a number five or number six overall pick in the NHL. He's only 33 years old. I think he's probably got a lot, or at least a decent amount left to give. So even if that third line is JVR, Brassard, and Allison, and you've got JVR on the top power play unit, I think that's okay for him. I mean, but then you're talking about Oscar Lindblom. If he gets back into how he was playing 2 years ago and he's on the fourth line, it's a tough pill to swallow, right? Like, you're kind of like almost wasting away a guy on a fourth line.
Yeah.
But we've also seen how important fourth lines are to success, especially in the playoffs. So you're, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning have won cups, and it hasn't been Kucherov like scoring these dirty, gritty goals at the end, you know, whatever. It's been some of the other guys. So if you think, you know, fourth line is like Lindblom and Nate Thompson and Scott Laughton, you know, that's fine, but the truth is that their wing, they're very deep on the wing, which is, again, part of why we're talking about Konecny being a potentially expendable guy. But yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, I feel like, on the wing for this team. Plus, you've got Tyson Forrester, who was really impressive last year in the AHL. He's probably going to be in the AHL again this year. And Zane Wisdom was really good last year. Now, he's had some, I think, shoulder surgery, so he's out until December. But this team is just stacked on the wing.
I didn't even mention Albay Kubel. This guy, I always forget. Like, where does he play? Is he, you know, is he obviously fourth liner, but does he see time, you know?
It's just, I think he's the guy who they might trade. Because the problem with him is
that
he's not waiver exempt anymore. I know he slid through waivers 2 years ago, but he had a pretty good year 2 years ago. I was surprised that Seattle took Carson Twarinski instead of Nicholas Albay Kubel, quite honestly. He wasn't good last year. Took a lot of dumb penalties, turned the puck over a lot. Not a high hockey IQ player, but I feel like you could get a fourth or fifth round pick for Albay Kubel. So if Fletcher is smelling in camp that Albay Kubel might not be a top four line guy, I think they might try and move him, but we'll see.
I agree with you that about Seattle. I just, they protected him. That's why he was.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. I think that was more about not protecting him, but more about forcing them to maybe try to take Jake or something. And obviously that went all our offseason plans in that regard with Seattle went to shit real quick. Yeah, I think part of me thinks they're done with him. Another part of me thinks like we got to play him with better players and maybe we'll get more out of him again. But he was a penalty machine last year, and that's not good. And they're going to need cap space. He's making over $1 million. With all these guys pushing to come up with the depth at wing, it's hard to imagine Aub Kubel being here longer than this season, if he even plays out the whole season. The question I have, I never was curious about JVR because he provides so much for you at the power play, particularly with his God hand-eye coordination with deflecting pucks. Wherever he plays in line is fine, and third line makes sense. I see here Brassard, Lawton, and JVR. Allison, I think, will actually play over Kubel on the fourth line, and they'll just juggle it as the season goes on. Nothing ever stays the same. One night we might see, you know, somebody on the top line that's a fourth line guy, so I'm not too worried. I just, who makes the team? And I think Allison is definitely on the team, and Kubel could be sitting in the press box if they can afford it. If not, it could be with the Phantoms. So my question, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say just a quick note on Allison. So Brett Flair, the assistant GM, did an interview with Charlie O'Connor. Or actually, it was a press conference, and Charlie asked him about Wade Allison. And he said Wade Allison will not be on the fourth line. He said he will either be on the top three lines or he'll be back in the AHL. So,
wow. Now, this is probably silly, but like, what if they get away with the whole we don't have a fourth line based on minutes? Like, they just have a mixture of, you know what I mean? Like, if Morgan Frost makes the team, but they still like Derek Brassard, and they have those two at center. You got Lindblom and Lawton and JVR and Allison are all your bottom six wingers. Like, is any of those really a fourth line over the other? You know what I mean? Like, if you line it up, it's kind of, I could see them getting around that. Either way, it's a good problem to have. But I was never really worried about JVR. I expect the world from Allison. He showed me a lot. It was funny as we came this close to losing the guy a couple of years ago. Had serious injury issues, but it's great to – right at the end of the season, it was like the only thing we could watch. I do have questions about Oscar Lindblom, though. Everybody's super high on the guy. Maybe not everybody, but a large amount of people remember what he did. It was actually a pretty small sample size, and obviously he went through hell, and thank God he's back here. But is anybody at all – and look, he's listed on the fourth line here. Is he really a fourth line player? I think he plays with talent. I think he's a guy you put with talent. And I'm a little worried that, one, maybe there's not – he's $3 million on your bottom, your worst line, and he's not playing with talent. Like, is anybody worried that we're not going to get the production or something close to it that we think we would? And maybe he's expendable at some point?
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like they have too many guys and not enough spots. That's why I'm interested to see how camp goes. It's going to be a competition, and competition usually breeds success, so – hoping to see that.
I mean, I think Chuck Fletcher clearly has put a big emphasis on the locker room and guys in the locker room. I would be shocked if he traded away the cancer survivor, quite honestly.
Oh yeah,
definitely not this year. but if things go bad and next year, and you know, maybe a couple of assistant coaches are let go or something, and your job's on the line, like maybe not him, but does he trade somebody else in favor of him or something along those lines? Okay. And I agree with you. The whole cancer thing is there. I don't think he does that. But, like, at the end of the day, it's a business. Like, and I just feel like something would be done.
The key for Lindblom is he – because I'm a believer in his, you know, post or pre-cancer play. Like, I think he's a really good hockey player. The question is, can he get back to that level, right? Like, he had a rib removed you know, as part of the cancer treatment. So I know that in the past, guys who have had, there have not been a whole lot of guys who've had a rib removed and like came back and like were effective NHL players. It didn't look like that was really impacting him, but I don't know. Well, now he's had a full off season to recuperate and to train. So I'm expecting Lindblom to have a pretty good bounce back year, but you're right. Like, what kind of bounce back year can he have if he's on the fourth line? I'm not sure, but I also don't think that he's better than Giroux, Farabee, or Van Riemsdyk. So I think that ultimately, you know, I don't know. I guess JVR could be a guy that would be moved. I'm not sure. Good problems to have.
I loved Lindblom when he came out. I love what he did. Like, his first year with the team, it seemed like he was pepper in the net, couldn't catch a break. Next season comes around, he starts putting up all these goals. And it's like you just said, like, are they going to – all these other guys they have, they're not going to trade them if they're good and they don't have to. But they're going to have a $3 million player on their fourth line, flat cap. It's a good problem to have, but financially – you got to re-sign Giroux. You're hoping you could probably could trade JVR after this season. You just need the money. You know, you just flat out need the money. You probably other moves you want to make. I'd be surprised if Martin Jones is really the answer. I think they're hoping that Sandstrom or Arison or Ustamenko comes up and plays a little bit of backup just for cost concerns. But if they're not and they have to go get somebody, that's going to cost money. You know, it's just I don't see – I love Lindblom, but I don't see how it works out in the fourth line here.
It'll be interesting for sure, especially if Lawton plays down here. You got two $3 million guys playing on your fourth line.
Well, Lawton's a little different because he could play like literally anywhere. Like he just he'd probably play defense for all we know. You know, it's just like that's – I think they gave him what they gave him for that versatility. He's like a better version of Raffle, I think. But Lindblom, he's a winger. I have him listed. He's like a goal scorer. He's got heart, though. That's the one thing. He'll push these other guys because he's got the heart. He'll play his ass off. He'll work, you know, and a lot of other guys are going to be on blast because of his work ethic. So that's a whole other thing within itself, I guess.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It is sort of a question mark heading into next season. Moving on, let's move on to our last topic here. It's not a question. Well, it sort of is a question. Flyers will be inducting somebody into the Hall of Fame for the first time, I believe, since 2016.
Are they definitely doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they got the candidates. They've whittled them down to six, and it sounds like I'd be surprised if it's only one. I think it's going to be two.
I had this discussion with Isaiah on ONB, and he was basically saying I was being too kind of like critical of the guys and like my, you know, being too strict in my, I wouldn't put any of the nominees in the hall.
Interesting.
Well, wow. Let's go through them.
Sure. And break them down because I'm like this when people throw the word, what's the word? Not franchise. Generational around way too much. And I'm like super critical and people look at me like, what are you talking about? So I want to hear this. Cause I like a lot of these nominees, but so go ahead, Dan.
Okay, I want to pull up the
Flyers. I got the list right here.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the like the Flyers career leaders. Okay, let's first start with Lou Nolan, who's been the public address announcer for a long time, right?
Since day one.
Put him in before he's gone. Guys, put him in.
Come on, day one.
I like Lou Nolan. Like he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Like Gene Hart. The Flyers have won the Stanley Cup. The Flyers have won the Stanley Cup. He gave birth to Lauren Hart, right?
Pico
like,
power play.
This guy.
Pico power play.
This guy should be in the Hall of Fame. Gene Hart. I like Lou Nolan. He shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I'm sorry. Like okay, you guys can talk about these guys when I'm done. Let me just go through these guys. Now we've got Mark Recchi. Okay. He's ninth all time among all Flyers in points with 627, but never won a Stanley Cup with the team. And that's only like 40% of his career points came with the Flyers. Like I'm sorry. I think that to get into the Flyers Hall of Fame, you either need to have like won multiple Stanley Cups or you need to have scored 800 points with the team. Like Claude Giroux right now has 858 points. This guy, doesn't matter what he does the rest of his career, he's going in the Flyers Hall of Fame. Mark Recchi's got 627 points. That's 20 points more than Jake Voracek. Are you going to put Jake Voracek in the Flyers Hall of Fame? I don't think so. So we're not putting Recchi in there. Rick Tocchet, he's not on any of these lists. Like, I like Rick Tocchet. Really good hockey player. Tough hockey player. He's not good enough. He didn't win any cups here, and he also isn't on their top scoring list. Like, why would we put Rick Tocchet in the Hall of Fame? Bob Kelly, okay, he won Stanley Cups. He was not, like, he never put up big point totals. That wasn't the kind of player he was. He should not be in the Hall of Fame. Simone Gagné, he's not on the Flyers' top 10 point scoring list. He didn't win a Stanley Cup. Like, this guy should not be in the Flyers' Hall of Fame. The only one of the six nominees that I think there's a legitimate argument for is Paul Holmgren. Now, was he a really good hockey player? No, he was like a mediocre to good hockey player. But as, you know, the general manager and all these roles, the president of the team, he's kind of like really been there in both roles. So I could see the argument for Paul Holmgren. But honestly, I don't think any of these people should be in the Flyers Hall of Fame. Win a Stanley Cup. I'm sorry. Like, please.
Lee Nolan was around for the Stanley Cup.
Oh, he got you there.
I don't know. Please. Cup? Either right, score 800 points.
If that were the case, Lindros, LeClaire, Brendan Moore, none of them would be in. And by the Desjardins. By the way, Brendan Moore probably has more points with Carolina, won a cup with Carolina, did not win with the Flyers. He's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think Recchi should get
it. But have you seen his abs? Like, come on. Like, Rod Brindamore should
be a better nickname. Okay, I'll give you that. But, like, Recchi holds the record for franchise points in a season with 123. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's good. That's good. And, this is hard to judge, but he never wanted to leave the Flyers. They traded him, and then they didn't re-sign him after the lockout in 05. He loves Philly. He always wanted to be here. We fucked that up. Like, he is a Flyer through and through. I understand the argument for Tocchet. Bob Kelly did score the game-winning goal in 75 against Buffalo. However, I get that. But Nolan, for the same reasons as Holmgren, although Holmgren definitely held every position possible. He did everything but, like, mop the floors.
I get Holmgren that. Stunk at every position.
Why don't we put Nolan Patrick in? Stink. Look, Nolan Patrick was the second overall pick in the draft.
Oh, no, look at that. It's a highly drafted Flyers
players. Let's put him in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, that's a big leap, don't you think?
We should have an anti-Hall of Fame.
I'm
not sure should be in there, and I'm not sure Desjardins should be in there. So,
it's the Flyers Hall of Fame, though. It's not the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's a big difference on eligibility. Because otherwise, it would literally be the 73-74 team and not much else. Like,
I can only imagine.
No, I think Cole Giroux and Eric Lindros should be in there.
You're taking LeClaire out of there. 350 goal years in a row, and he doesn't get in.
Okay, LeClaire can stay in, but it's, you know what? I don't know.
How about Tim Kerr?
Yeah, Tim Kerr can be in.
Mark Howe?
Mark Howe's probably the best defenseman in team history.
Oh, yeah. So, but not Jimmy Watson's out, or I'm sorry, Joe Watson's out.
He's already in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to, like, get the bullies. I don't want Dave Schultz to show up at my house.
He's in, by the way, too. Dave Schultz is in, by the way.
I was at that one, I believe.
Dave Schultz should definitely be in the Hall of Fame.
All right, so there's a little discrepancy here.
They won Stanley Cups. Win a Stanley Cup. I'm sorry.
He was on a team that won a Stanley Cup. Yes, he was.
Like,
but then
94% of the Flyers organization has never won a Stanley Cup.
Larry Goodenough should be in the Hall of Fame too, and who was the backup goalie to? I can't even think of.
Great hockey name right there, Larry Goodenough.
I'm just saying, like, these are the guys that, because they won a cup, and you're not wrong. There needs to be more to it than that, but you know, this is a financial thing. They're gonna get the Knights going. They're gonna put people in, and fans do like their players immortalized. Let's be real, it is what it is. You know, it shouldn't just be a cup. Is a cup your number? Like, well, not just a cup. Hall of Fame and a cup, are those like your two things?
What do you mean Hall of Fame and a cup?
So you said Lindros should be in. He's in the Hall of Fame. Drew's got a good case. I don't know if he'll get in.
No, what I said was 800 points or win a Stanley Cup. Total. I think you either need to be like spectacular.
But with the team. But it's got to be with the team.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, Mark Recchi's got like 1,400 career points. That's awesome. He's a great NHL player. I don't know. You know, he's barely top 10 in the franchise in points. He's just ahead of Jake Voracek, who I like I said, I don't think you guys want to put him in the Flyers Hall of Fame. I don't know.
That's a good comparison in the fact that some of our worst years were with Jake Voracek. So I understand that. Just to break it down. And it's defensemen are a little bit tougher. But like, okay, Giroux, like, he was here when we went to, he was like a rookie when we went to the cup. But after that, there was a couple decent years, the Jager years. But after that, it's been dog shit.
You're in a different stratosphere. He's got 858 points. Giroux is probably going to
retire. I'm not arguing that he'll get in. I'm just saying, like, how much stock are we putting into certain things? Like, because let's be real. Since their cup year to today, it's been probably the worst era of Flyers hockey overall. I mean, is there another era you can think of that's worse than that? Like, they've been really bad and embarrassing.
No, I mean, I think that right before the Lindros era was really bad. And I think
that was only a couple of years though. That was like 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that the JVR, like the years when they had, you know, they ended up with the first pick in the draft and they got bounced down to second with JVR, like that was pretty bad. Like,
I mean, that was 1 year.
I feel like the Eastern Conference Finals. I feel like at least the last 5 or 6 years, we've gone into the season optimistic about the team. Whereas in some of those other years, like we knew they were going to be a really bad team, you know? But it's pathetic. I mean, it's pathetic. Like, it's.
I mean, but at the same time, I'm more open to having these guys in because it's the Flyers Hall of Fame. I do like a more strict view. I don't like letting anybody in. Understanding from a realistic aspect here, all these guys are going to eventually get in. Somebody even advocated that, like, just put the entire cup teams in and be done with it just because they won the cup and then we can move on to other guys. Just, it's just silly, like, having these guys, like, trickle out year after year. And I kind of agree with that. The trickling out, not so much as throwing them all in, but they're going to, it's just a, it's a show. It's a circus. It's what they're going to do. And if
not understanding
that, well, I mean, financially, I think it's about the money. Like I went to Lindros LeClaire night and those tickets sit up highest seat in the building against the wall were friggin' expensive, man. And I think that's what it's about, especially when you consider this team now. When they were having issues before COVID getting fans in the building.
The Flyers don't make any additional – the tickets are the same to the Flyers. It's all the secondary markets. It's me, the season ticket holder, who's making more money off of that kind of stuff.
But they sell merchandise. Like this shirt I'm wearing, like this – hold on, wrong one. This is LeClaire and Lindros. Like that's extra money. And people buy that shit because it's a one-time thing. There's posters, cards, there's everything. Unless I sell it on eBay or something, but then somebody else will wear it. Ain't right. They're making money. They are, and that's why they do. Why? Otherwise, why would they?
I don't know.
They haven't done it since Snyder died. They just re-upped it. Like there's a back end here for somebody in some way, shape, or form. More people are buying tickets for that game, at the very least. Say tickets that aren't normally sold because they're terrible. And the seats just go unsold from the team, they're buying those tickets for that game. So maybe the tickets aren't more expensive, but the seats are being sold.
Could be so. And we will find out. We're about 3 minutes over an hour in the episode here. Why don't we bring it to an end, boys? Dan, you got anything you want to promote out there? Anything you want to bring up for the end of the show?
Nah, folks can follow me on Twitter at DSilver88. And, and I'm also on the O&B podcast with Isaiah and Chef, and you know, happy to be on with you guys. Love you guys. Whenever you guys want to have me on, it's great, man. I'm just excited for the season.
What jersey? Who you got on there? I didn't ask.
It's just the Drew.
Just the Drew. That's all. See this puppy back here?
800 point club only.
That's got your name on it.
Yeah, you know, that's Jim and I have a bet that if – what does he have to score, 60 points? I don't know.
60 points, still has the tags, brand new, waiting for you. That's
and if Shane doesn't score 60 points another season in his career, then I got to buy Jim dinner wherever he wants. So it's a win-win for me. I either get that jersey or I get dinner with this beautiful man. So, you know.
Yeah, and knowing Jim, he'll be a hospital visit depending on what he orders.
Oh, my God, yeah. God forbid. All right, so we're going to wrap this episode up. Dan, thanks as always for hanging out with us. Make sure you guys go check out Full Circle. Check out the new episode of Pod Street Bullies just came out. Go support those guys. They do great work as always. Check out the site, hwhockey.net. Johnny's putting out a lot of articles over there, John and Derek as always. And who knows, next time you see a Dan Silver article, you might just see it on hwhockey.net. For the boys, I'm Jim. We're going to wrap this episode up. We'll be back next week.